tremendous talk. We got the industry tea and the jokes. Actors, directors, musicians, and more. You're listening to Tremendous Talk.
Hey guys, I'm Law.
And I'm Ash, and this is a Tremendous Talk podcast.
Yes, each week, join us as we guide you through the realms of Hollywood and beyond while we speak to industry professionals in the spotlight.
So, grab that boba tea and leave your shoes at the door. Welcome to Tremendous Talk!
Let's go! Yes, it has been a little bit since we have spoken to each other, and the podcast is rolling. I know that we have a couple episodes out, but if you're new here, my name is Law. I'm a Filipino Indian American actor, producer, and host who is just happy to be here and trying his best to have the energy today. And this is my co-host.
Hi, my name is Ashley. I am a Filipino American actor, musician, and publicist who just stuffed her face with a little nice vegan salad. Woohoo!
Whoa, whoa. Vegans, I guess there are components to a salad that can be traditionally not vegan. I'm just like,
dude, have you never heard of a vegan salad? It's a vegetable.
It's just vegetables. Just call it that. I'm just kidding.
Have you ever had vegetables in a bowl?
We call that a salad where I'm from, which is America.
Speaking of salad, Law, what are you eating these days?
What am I eating? Let me tell you this. My mom, I went home for the weekend because I did a little road trip up to the Bay. My mom just stacked me with like a bunch of mangoes. I know that's like a random thing, but I have so many mangoes, and like I had some last night. I had some today. They're so good. I love mangoes. It might be my favorite fruit. Shout out to mom. Mom always taking care of me, always giving me way too many groceries whenever I come home. So I appreciate that. What about you?
We love you, Mom, a lot. I feel like that's a thing. And is it just AAPI culture or any culture where you visit your parents' house once, literally for 30 minutes, and you come home with a full trunk of groceries?
Yeah, 100%. My friend was driving with me, and I just felt bad because I was like, I was carrying out like a sack of rice and like a box of ramen and like a miscellaneous Amazon box that was just like full of like spam and like corned beef and condiments and like toiletries. And I'm just like, dang, I don't even have to think about getting groceries right now. So I think immigrant families, for sure, it's like a common thing that moms just love really hard. So love you, Mom. Yeah. Thank you so much.
That's how you show food. Love. They don't have it in the book, but love is a form of affection. I don't know about this physical touch, but I mean, food. Food is showing
food.
Love.
Food is showing food is love, showing especially love. Especially where from our background, I think. It's a, did you eat is like,
yeah,
did how you are eat? You? You know what I mean?
What is that thing called? Five.
Love language.
Love language. That's it. Yeah. Food is a love language. Gosh, that's what it's called.
Food is a love language. I agree with that. What? How's your love life been going in the food era?
My food love life. We recently took a trip. And so me being the money-saving person I am, we literally ate sandwiches the entire trip, dude. So I have so much bread in my body right now. I'm full of bread. My body is 90% bread at the moment. So that's why I'm eating salad, because I literally cannot look at another piece of bread without crying.
I totally get that. Like sometimes, like you went to Disneyland, right? Like that's
all right, let's get into it. Yes. I did go.
Let's do a little recap. Let's do a recap.
Because we don't talk to each other. I like that we don't talk to each other and we get to catch up on the podcast.
We actively avoid each other and our lives so that we can do this, guys. So
yes, we
you're really coming in between our friendship. Yeah. So, but yeah, tell me all about it, because I didn't see that many pictures. So it's like, did you even go?
I'm really bad at posting when I go places because I try to be in the moment, but then I forget to do it. So 6 months later, I'm like, hey, I got married last year.
Surprise.
Yeah, exactly. Right. This last weekend, I dragged the husband and we went to, okay, it was a packed trip, dude. It wasn't even like a vacation. Day one, California Adventure. Day two, Disneyland. Day three, Universal Studios. Day four, the beach. It was crazy.
You did crazy. You did three amusement parks out here? Dang. Your feet must have been barking.
Oh, you have no idea. These dogs were screaming, man.
Yes.
And so we literally plan the entire day from like 8 a.m. to midnight every single day, because I'm like, we spend this much money, I'm going to get my money's worth out of these days.
Yeah.
And Jared doesn't like roller coasters, right? Like, he's not a roller coaster guy. So, of course, the first ride we go on for the entire trip is a roller coaster. And that kind of set the tone. It was a fun trip. But yeah, we ate sandwiches the whole time. It was just kind of like letting our inner child play for a couple of days, because we don't really get days off.
Yeah.
Since Jared is a teacher, we can only leave during certain times of the year. Basically, it's pretty strict. So now I owe him a 1 day do nothing trip, which
there
I'm
you
nervous
go.
About.
Like go to do camping or something and do nothing. Like,
I think that's
no
even
service.
Too exertion. Like go to a lazy river for 24 hours and just float.
Oh, I see. Like literally do nothing except breathe, basically.
I would have a panic attack. Like, I can't not do anything. Okay.
Yeah,
wait.
Yeah.
So speaking of doing stuff, you've done a lot in the past couple days.
It's been a busy last week. As I've said on this podcast, and I actually, during JB's episode, I talked about this, but I got to see twice for the first time, my favorite K-pop group, got to see them for the first time on Saturday in LA. I had like the VIP seats, so I was like super close, and I like screamed my head off. I was with a really great group of people, and it was amazing, as I expected it to be, but even it somehow exceeded my expectations. They're so goddamn beautiful. After that, I actually got to go home. I went to San Jose. I met the new puppy. His name is RJ. I got to see my parents, which was really nice. We celebrated Father's Day a little early for my pop. And then I had a friend, Warren, and he hooked it up with another Twice ticket. So I went to Oakland, stayed with my best friend, Johnny, in his brand new home with his fiance, Ivania. Love them. Got to hang out with two cats that were very sweet. Halumi is extra sweet to me. And then I got to see Twice somehow even closer than the first time. Yeah, like these seats were insane. I interacted with members, and I don't want to get too crazy into it, but I will be posting like recaps and reels on my account on Instagram and stuff. So if you care about K-pop, come on down. But Jiminy Crickets, what a day. What a week. And then I just drove back last night, so I am a little low energy, but I hope you can't tell because I am an actor after all. But
how are you okay with, like, you met your favorite band and you got to interact with them? I would be a pot of like melted goo now. Like,
I'm still the goo. Yeah. There's a clip where I make one not character. They're not characters. They're real people. there was one member named Sana, and she's so cute and flirty. And they were saying, this is our last song. And you can just hear me in this video go, no. And she just starts cracking up and points at me and like shows all the other members, and they like look at me and laugh. And like, I have rewatched that video clip an unhealthy amount. I even took screenshots of the moments we locked eyes just so I could be like, wow, she was looking at me right there. I'm going to tell myself that she thought I was cute, and that's why she was looking over at me already. So, I'm going to have that in my head, and my standards will continue to be very, very high for the rest of my life.
You literally have confidence booster fuel for the rest of your eternity.
For sure. For sure. Like, I can't tell you the amount of joy I felt. I always talk about Twice being like my small but certain happiness. And that those days, they were my giant certain happinesses. Like, it was just insane. And I don't know if I'll ever get a chance like that again. So it was very, very,
oh my
very
gosh.
Cool.
It's cool that that one moment can provide you a small but certain happiness by going back to that video and seeing like your interaction for forever.
Yes.
That's so great. Let's go. This week on the podcast, we are so honored to be chatting with Vera Chow. Vera Chow is a world-renowned costume designer. You've seen her work on projects like The Walking Dead, Boogie, and Food Wars, and so much more, dude, and is currently working on The Brother Son, Judgment, and so much more. Like, literally, her IMDb goes on for freaking miles. Her favorite film is Batteries Not Included. She does not have a great zombie apocalypse plan, apparently. We're going to get into that later. And she loves to colorfully decorate her hotels and apartments. Welcome to the podcast, Vera Chow!
Hello! Ooh, I just shaved my armpits. Thank God.
All right, let the killy show. Where, yeah, there we go.
Killy!
Killy Killy Power. Well, welcome to the podcast. I know Ash is very, very excited to have you on. And yeah, we're just excited to uplift voices, but specifically, like, from a costume perspective, that's like even more exciting. We haven't had someone in wardrobe or costuming yet. So thank you. Welcome.
Oh, my.
Okay, so first we're going to do take off every single thing from behind you and explain what it is one by one.
Every single one, every piece. But there are fun things in the back. Like that thing right here is a Mongolian wrestling piece I did for Marco Polo. And then this is a Walking Dead zombie jacket. So there are fun things. This is just shit I stole from work, so it's not fun.
I love that. So from stalking you online and looking at all your interviews and literally reading up on as much as I can about you and working with Jeremiah, too, we kind of talk about you a lot at work. You are just this, like, freaking badass, dude. Like, your IMDb page is amazing. You've worked on these incredible projects, and your work literally speaks for yourself. Like, talking about your background, you have the Walking Dead jacket back there. You have these incredible pieces behind you. Your work is literally seen and is so integral to every single project you've been on. But I'm so stoked to get to know you, because something that I've noticed is that you have this, like, beautiful journey behind you, right? Like, your journey from Hong Kong to where you are now to everything kind of in between. I'm so, like, I kind of want to read the book on you. Can you mention, I don't even know where to start. Where do I start with this?
Give us origin story stuff. Like a brief origin story.
Oh my God.
How did Vera come to be? You know what I mean?
Okay. I'll keep it short because, you know, it can get sad at some point. But
Vera, we are here for the sadness too. We're a little sad people.
We're vulnerable as hell.
Well, I grew up in Hong Kong before the handover back to China. And, like, you know, I'm sure we've all gone through this with, like, our personalities and everything. We froze again. This has to be me. We froze again.
You're good. We can hear
you.
Yeah.
Okay. You're good now.
All right, I'm going to start from the beginning. Like, I grew up in Hong Kong, and, you know, like, I'm sure we've all gone through this, our personalities or sexual orientation or looks or just being creative, it doesn't really jive with our home country very much back in the 80s and 90s. So I was bullied a lot, you know, like, teachers thought there was something wrong with me. My poor parents, who just got here yesterday, my poor parents, teachers called them and be like, what's wrong with her? Like, are you guys having a divorce? Are you guys having problems? Does she need a shrink? And they, like, forced me to see, like, a fucking social service. Can I just curse here?
Go for it.
I can.
Go for it, dude.
We'll take care.
I was forced to go see a social worker or a counselor or something because there's something wrong with me. And it just turns out I'm just freaking creative. So I was bullied a lot, and I went into that really typical Asian geeky world of, like, manga, anime, comics, and Kindergarten Cop. I freaking love Kindergarten Cop. I love Arnold. And then I start, like, drawing those things, and I realize the only way you can know what I'm drawing is by these people, how they look. So that's just kind of how, like, I had no friends. I mean, do I have friends now? I don't know. But back, like, you know, I had no friends because I was such, like, a freak, and then I would just draw these fantasy lands, and then by age 13-ish, I knew that apparently that was a job. Like, costume design is a job. So it's been, like, this, like, crazy, like, Asian tunnel vision since I was 13 that this is what I'm doing. And then I left when I was, like, 17, came here and just never looked back.
Oh, that's amazing. So metal. I love that. So from doing all of this, I mean, like, I am so excited to talk to you, dude. I can't even, like, explain it. So do you think you kind of manifested your life? Because in all the, from what you just said too, and in the past interviews I've listened to, you kind of drew these characters to what you wanted to be, right? Like, to what you kind of aspired to look like or to kind of be seen as or whatever it is. Do you think you manifested either your job in costume design or just your personality and all of who you are today?
I think so. Like, I don't want to sound too hokey, but, like, I kind of do believe in that. Like, if I were to look at these drawings that I did before, maybe I'll end up sounding like a total narcissist. But, like, even down to, like, the hair color on the piercings or the clothes is exactly what I look like today. So at some point, I was really sure when I was 13, 14, 15, where I'm living, where I'm going, what I'm doing. So maybe manifestation is real. Like, Don't say that to a New York person. Don't be like, that's very LA of you. But, you know, I do think I believe it. I believe it for sure.
I think there's something to that, though, right? Like, when you think about, because I had a question for later, but since it's coming up now, I wondered, like, in your past, when you're this kid drawing stuff, did any of those images stick out and now they're like real life costumes that you've made, or like maybe a dress that you've made for yourself? Like, is there something that you're like, man, I can't believe I drew that when I was like 14, 15, and now it's on, you know, whatever project it is. Do you have something like that, or did it kind of just manifest in your own style?
I mean, like, I think it's not like to the T, like not like 100% exactly, but I think, you know, for the first 10, 15 years of my career, there's a limit to how creative I can be because I'm starting to like work my way into my career. But when I get a show like Brother Son or Walking Dead, where I am the head of the department and I can do whatever I want, I am seeing certain themes that, like, especially on Brother Son, I'll be like, you know what? I want two collars on the suit. And no one's going to stop me. and I do that. And I have seen that it is, I think I have like some of my drawings in here, like it's locked up in a lockbox and like a really, like in like a little, with like a little code and everything. But there are some similarities. Like the work today I do doesn't look like me, because that would be really weird if I try to make Justin Chan look like me. But it is, the aesthetic is there. There is a through line somewhere that I'm like, I want the world to see this.
That's so beautiful. Yeah. And then in your work with working with like the people you mentor now and working with all like these Girl Scout groups and like classes and everything, what is it like to be able to, like, when you were a kid, you weren't able to fully be yourself, but you're encouraging these kids to kind of like be themselves and really go for it and everything. Mm-hmm. What's the journey from kind of teaching these kids how to do that? How does it feel for you?
It did take a long time, because like I've been doing this for like 15 to 20 years. And honestly, this is going to sound like I'm like kissing Jeremiah's ass or whatever, but it's okay. I just saw him like 4 days ago. But it's a little bit of like, if it wasn't for the current climate of how things are, that we have all this AAPI representation and pride, and starting from like everyone starting to speak up, for the first 10 years of my career, or even 15, because this is pretty recent, I wasn't proud of it. The way to survive is to be, I don't know how controversial I can get on this podcast. This is Jeremiah.
Dude, go for it. Like,
I know I can. It's like, you know, we didn't make it here in that generation in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s without being white, very white adjacent one way or another. You're not talking about, I want all the Asians to succeed in the future, or I want all the BIPOC and the non-binary people to succeed in the future. You're like, oh my God, I love football too. Wow, I love it. Like, you know, it's like, let's go to Macaroni Grill. Like, you're just trying to be white adjacent. You're not proud of being Asian and being a department head. You just want to blend in so you can kind of be like the rest of the salmon swimming upstream and be like, please don't notice that I'm not a salmon. I'm like a catfish. But like now in the last 2-3 years, I am the catfish went upstream with the salmon. Now I can see what other little catfish is still out there and be like, you don't need to be a salmon anymore. You can just like swim as a fucking catfish and just come up here as a catfish. Like,
listen, as a coconut or like a recovering coconut, you know, white on the inside,
recovering,
brown on the
out. Recovering.
Recovering, yes. Coconut. That speaks to my soul. So I appreciate it. You did mention, I mean, we were listening, obviously doing research and stuff, and there's just like a line that stuck out to me where it's like, don't turn back on your Asian-ness. It's such a simple phrase, but it is powerful. You know what I mean? And like, I wonder now, you're an adult, you're talking about being this catfish, swimming upstream with your baby catfish. How do you define like your cultural identity now for yourself?
I mean, I guess I think I did because I think I say that because I did turn my back on it, which was like, I told someone before that I don't regret doing it, because in that generation, like, I'm trying to make myself sound really old, but my Botox helps me not look that old. But like back then, I wouldn't be here if I didn't, and I will never be ashamed that I was white adjacent for like 10 years to survive, because I was a fob. I came here when I was 17 with a Chinese accent, like, my school is a Hong Kong school and everything. So I have to pretend. If I put in my resume and say I'm from Hong Kong, which people still say you're from China or you're from Asia, I would never, like they would never have given me a chance back then. So I think now it did take other people to be proud of it too. I will never say that I am the pioneer on saying I'm a fob. It's amazing. Like, I will be honest and say that I did see other people do it first and then realize I am also in the position to do it. I have nothing to lose anymore. And see, I don't know where I was going with that, but that's the thing. Like, so now I like speak Cantonese in production meetings. Honestly, if you don't understand it, that's like kind of your problem. Like, I speak your language fluently. Why can't you try to learn mine? Like, I freaking go to Thanksgiving. I don't even like turkey.
True. 100%.
Why are we doing a hot pot right now? This is dumb.
Yes. Yes.
It's dry.
Yes. Like, I don't even like pumpkin pie. It's dumb. Anyways.
Whoa, hold on, Vera. A little too
far. Oh, fighting words.
Hold on. Do you like pie in general? Random question. You don't like pie?
I do. I do like chicken pot pie. But, you know, like colonization, Hong Kong, British, chicken pot pie, yep. Savory pie.
Yeah. Yep.
That's so funny.
You know what's so cool?
I know I can say things like this at a Jeremiah podcast.
Yes, you can. You 100% can. Yeah. It's cool because you talk about like kind of not being there for these years of you being in Hong Kong and everything and not kind of owning that for a while and stuff too. And now you're owning it again in the recent years, but also your journey is reflected in your career so much that now you started like with Marco Polo, the start of Marco Polo, and now the Brother Son and everything in between. You're working on these films in projects, and you are the person bringing those cultural elements on set and on screen. Like, you are the person that creates the minute details that people are going to look on screen and be like, holy crap, that's me, dude. Mm-hmm. How, like, do you ever just sit at night and you're like, wow?
I would like to, but I think we have a lot more work to do. And yeah, I mean, because my parents are on my mind right now since they're taking like a really jet lag nap, like 10 feet away from me, is that they definitely do remind me, because they would literally be like, who's Alec Baldwin? Like, like, because they don't care and they don't get it. So to this day, they definitely do keep me grounded. And I remember I did a movie with Jay Chou in Malaysia, Jay Chou's wife in Malaysia. And I had a director's chair. This is Vera Chow, costume designer. I was like so excited about it. And like a good Asian, the only thing I thought of was to give it to my parents. Like, oh, I didn't. Yeah. You know, like, that's what, you know, that's how we all think. Like, and so I gave it to my parents and they're like, what's this? So it, it does kind of, I think it's a good thing, because I think there's so few of us out there in the industry right now, the last thing I want to do is to let it get to our heads. And then we just fade away like a trend, because Hollywood cannot wait to fade us away just like a trend. And this cannot be another trend, like rest in peace, like Bruce Lee or whatever, or like Anna May Wong. Like, when they passed, Hollywood was like, well, I guess there's no one left. Like, and then it became a trend, and we cannot do this again. We cannot let this. This is not a trend. This is just statistics of the world. So the answer is no.
Yeah.
There's a lot more work to do is what I'm saying.
You're staying hungry. We appreciate that. You know, the hustle and the drive. And it's interesting because I was going to ask like how the Asian boom is what I call it right now in Hollywood. But like, how does that energy affect you? And you actually just answered it. But I kind of want to go back to you using the word fob, because growing up, fob was like an insult.
Is that a bad word now?
No, but that's the thing. I was going to ask, do you think it still carries negative connotations? Because you almost are like redefining it for yourself, right? Like,
also, I think it's great. I'm really proud of it now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think we should all be really proud of it, because the reason we're ashamed of it back then is a construct. We were told by a Caucasian construct that is embarrassing. At no point was it embarrassing. And somehow we just believed it as a freaking truth that speaking in Chinese or Tagalog or Hindi in front of white people is embarrassing. Like, I know, I think you speaking like, can I have a burger and fries in like, you know, in Vietnam, I think that's embarrassing. Like, so being a fob is a bad word because we were told that.
Yeah.
It is not a bad word at all. Like, we come with we come with so much history, culture, and psychological baggage that it just gives us so much more dimension. And then we somehow are still able to completely assimilate into an American, Canadian, British culture. I think that's pretty impressive. Like, we all assimilate perfectly and never lost what we have before. And if we lost it, we can always get it back. I think a fob is a good word. I'm really proud of it.
Bringing power to the word fob. That's great. You know what I mean? Because I had a fear of being fobby. FOB. Some of us came on planes, so FOP. I don't know.
FOP. I'm FOP.
There we go.
I do remember the first time I heard another Filipino say, like, oh, are your parents fob or whatever it was? Like, hearing it in a positive connotation, I was like, we're allowed to do that? That's new. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, they weren't sailors. That's a weird question. What do you mean?
Yes, exactly. Like, my parents are fobs. You know, they're here right now, and they speak Cantonese, Mandarin, English. Like, I actually think that's extremely impressive.
So impressive. I don't know my parents' languages. Like, I've tried to learn. We just spoke English at home. You know, my dad's Indian, my mom's Filipino. And I, like, truthfully, as a kid, I was repressing my Asianness, you know, so I wasn't eager to learn. And now in my 30s, I'm like, I wish I did, you know what I mean? So it's interesting to hear you talk about it in that light. It's almost empowering for you. Like this is where I came from and this is who I am. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're kind of like kicking me off my feet now because I'm thinking about my mother and the way that I was raised. And like, no one taught me Tagalog in the house. You kind of weren't allowed to speak Tagalog. You weren't allowed to bring our the kind of smelly foods that we have. We weren't allowed to do those things in school because I had to bring a Lunchable. I had to be the white kid. I had to check off white in the boxes. And hearing your journey, it's just so inspiring to be like, yeah, this is who I am now. This is who I will forever be. These are my parents. Like, this is what you get. And now I'm going to be able to show it on screen, whether it be in my storytelling or whether it be in the costumes that I create. That's sick.
Because we don't have to do that shit anymore. We don't have to. I don't shame anyone for doing it before because we had to. Like, I don't think anyone should feel ashamed of that because you stand on the shoulders of people that had to play that game for the doors to even open. So fine.
Mm-hmm. While we're on the topic of just getting into know your journey a little bit, can we do some quick fire questions? Let's go. Portion of the podcast. Woohoo! Yay. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. Just answer them quickly, whatever what comes to your head first. All right. All right. Let's do it. Oh, current song on repeat.
Oh my gosh. Shit. Backstreet Boys. I went back to Backstreet Boys like last week.
What? Dude. Okay, I'm going to ask about that later. That's very
exciting. I went back to Breaking Boys last week. I don't know why.
Something that you're good at that nobody knows.
Flaring my nostrils.
Oh, ooh, my mom says I do that whenever I lie.
Can we get a little, there it is. Ooh.
Like, yeah, like, it's very aggressive.
You're quick with it. You got a little, you're quick with it. I like it.
I can do it like to like a song beat. Moving on.
Oh my gosh. Okay, something you're currently obsessed with.
Oh my gosh, shit. Quick fire. This is a quick fire question. So my foster dog. This is not very fun, but my foster dog. I've been, you know, there's a strike in the business. We're not working. So I've been fostering and there is bones and dog hair all over my house.
What kind of dog is it?
Yeah, what kind of dog?
She's a Pitbull Rottweiler Hound mix from a shelter called Social Tees. And I think she just got an application for adoption.
Oh my gosh, yay!
Forever home.
Yeah.
Congrats, little one.
Forever I'm obsessed home. With her. Obsessed with her.
Are you going to adopt a dog of your own one day after fostering this one?
Maybe not yet. I travel a little too much. I had two dogs before. One, his name is Chairman Chow. It doesn't get any more Asian than that. He was like a Chinese dog found in Flushing.
That is so
cool. And then the second dog is from Georgia, and he became the Walking Dead mascot because he basically lived on set for a year.
That's so cute. Oh, my gosh. Okay, there's so much that I want to get back into. Okay, what's your favorite comfort food?
Dumplings. It's my, if I am on death row for whatever reason, I actually think it's highly possible I might one day end up on death row. I don't know.
I like that it almost sounded like you were going to list reasons like why you're going to be. I thought about it.
But dumplings, whatever kind of like Chinese, Taiwanese, Asian type of dumplings, soup dumplings. It's all I think about. Oh, and sock paneer.
Yeah, shout out to the Indian food.
I dream. I like crave sock paneer all the time.
I'm all about it
all the time.
We have a recurring theme of getting very hungry on the podcast. I don't know why I keep on asking. I need to like, talk about this. All right, what's your current happy hour order?
I'm a big whiskey person. I swear to God, I'm not just saying that. So dudes are like, whoa, she's badass. Like, I am a big whiskey person. And then I'm actually currently dating a guy that cannot do whiskey. And I thought that was really funny because I'm like,
I'm cooler than you just by default. Yeah,
exactly. Yes, I'm a big whiskey, like fancy whiskey.
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't Jack Daniels.
Oh, yes. I was a Jack Daniels little like street rat for years.
I'm like a Japanese whiskey person.
Oh, yeah.
All my alcohol is Kirkland brand, so I'm just kidding.
Yes.
That's okay. I got truly, truly hard cider in my fridge.
Oh, yeah. Okay, and the last one we'll do, going to 7-Eleven, what can I get you?
Ooh.
Shit, 7-Eleven. A Red Bull, always into a Red Bull, and Hot Cheetos.
There we go.
Yes.
Red Bull and Hot Cheetos.
Combo.
Wow, that's my gosh, it's so trash. That is so trashy.
That is a very Hollywood, that's like a crafty diet right there. It's like, give me caffeine and the spiciest chips you got. It's a Welch's fruit snack, exactly.
Yes, excellent.
Especially the grape ones.
Anyways.
Hot commodities on the table. Hot commodities. I want to go back to, oh my gosh, so many like amazing things you said, but I want to talk about The Walking Dead, dog. Did it just like roam around on set? I want to know everything about it.
There's a big like pit bull breeding thing situation. Like there's a big problem over there in Georgia because, you know, they're like glamorous dogs for toxic men, you know, like it still is. So he's been overbred and abused for like 7 years, and then he got old and sick, and then a guy just dumped him in the shelter. So I took him in as a foster and nursed him back to health. And then he just roams free on The Walking Dead. There is like a photo of him with like 10 dead zombies laying next to him.
Oh, that's so funny.
My heart. Oh my gosh.
And he's just standing there like, what's happening? What are these? Yeah. He was a good boy. I loved him.
Oh, can you talk a little bit about your experience of creating these iconic wardrobes on The Walking Dead? Because you're not only doing this like apocalypse attire or like, you know, dystopian attire for the characters in the scenes, but you're also creating the zombies, correct?
Well, the clothing, but in terms of like the masks and the special effects, I work with the executive producer, Greg Nicotero, on a lot of it because he's the expert on like prosthetics and all that. So one of the best things I get to do, because Greg is such an icon, like he rose to fame in like Jaws and stuff like that. So to see, I was study how he's doing all these masks and zombie faces and hands, and I will match my clothing accordingly. Because one of those few things I think people might find interesting is that, because, you know, we have hundreds of these zombies, you're not doing like a 4-hour prosthetic and perfect costume for everyone. Like, we don't have the time for that. So he actually created a tier system. So the guys in the front has like all the teeth, the ear, the eyes, the hair, everything. And that's how I know my clothing needs to be on point. Like, we melt the clothes, we bleach the clothes, we like put it in like, you know, erosive, corrosive things. And then I basically follow his lead, and then it goes into the bottom tier. The simplest tier from way far back is actually all just 3D printed, like a swimming cap or like gloves. And it's just like laser printed. And that's when I'm like, I don't know, spray paint that shit. Send them to set. toss some sand on them. You won't see them. Yeah.
It's so interesting to see how costuming in specific is so, like, you have to puzzle piece with so many different departments. Like, what is the actor doing? Are they moving? Are they moving in a different direction? Mm-hmm. Is there going to be a prosthetic over this item? Is there going to be like, do they need to be singing? I don't know, whatever the hell it is.
Oh my god, singing. So can you imagine if there's singing?
A singing zombie? There's a movie about that, actually, which is really funny. I've seen like latex printers in real life, and I was just like, what is the need for this? And then it was like, to make props. It's for people like you. I am curious though, because the continuity and logistics of your role specifically has to be nuts. Because when I've been on set before and they put me in an outfit, it's like, you know, reference photos and like making sure you return it with the tag and the hanger. Does that stuff, is that fun for you? Do you hate the logistics stuff because you started as a creative, or have you just gotten so used to kind of the way that the workflow is on these big productions?
I mean, I do have people for that, but it is, I enjoy it. I'm like, you know, I'm like such an OCD Asian. Like sometimes my team would be like, stop micromanaging me. And I'm like, no, I'm just curious. I'm leaving. Like, it's just, I feel like the logistic parts actually does help me. Different designers work different ways. Some of them are just like, art, wee, and then they just go off and they don't know what's going on. And, but they are usually fantastic artists and they make beautiful stuff. I am kind of like a very balanced left and right brain. So I do care about the stunts. I actually build my stuff after knowing the stunt work, the prosthetics, the scene number, and that it has to be practical for my team. But I do like it. I did start it as a costume supervisor first. So I am extremely OCD, as you can tell.
I mean, it's gotten you as far as you needed to go, right? Like, and further and beyond. We'll see.
And even beyond.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like a mad scientist working with all these like corrosive things and like destroying and creating all these materials?
I do. That's why it was really weird in Brother Sun when I didn't have to do it. Like when my team would be like, Vera, it doesn't need to be dirty. It's done. I'm like, what? They're like, no, it only takes a week to like, oh we'll be done in 2 days. I'm like, what do you mean 2 days? Like, doesn't it have to go through like, don't we have to age? And they're like, Vera, you forgot. Like, this is the $6,000 suit. It doesn't really need to get. I was like, oh, you're right.
But what if we weathered it just like a little bit? Yeah.
And they're like, no. Because I mean, for 2 years, everything needs to look like shit. Mm-hmm. Everything. So it's, and like, there's such an art to it, to looking like shit, that people don't realize that we have to put it through like all these weird science concoctions. That I do have Adria Dyers who are experts at it. That would be like, okay, now stop it with hydrogen peroxide and then now bleach it in the collar. Like, there's a whole science to if it's sun bleach, if it's oil, if it's in a cave, if it's in this country. Like, there's different types of dirt. We have different names for our different types of dirt. We have like epoxy clay to make like slime. Like, water is not water. It's like a glycerin silicone mix. So it is fascinating. Like, I did learn a lot from my team on The Walking Dead because they've been doing that stuff for years.
Okay, follow-up question about Walking Dead. Do the costumes look or smell as bad as they look? Because like, with all of this stuff.
No, because that's just all fake.
Yeah, because it's all fake. I was wondering, like, because like, it does look stanky over there, but it's just like, they're costumes at the end of the day, but it's some of, especially the later seasons where the people are like wearing like the zombie skins and stuff. Just like, amazing.
What was it like to go from this show that you had to create like such distressed costumes and going from now, like these thousands of dollar suits and everything, did you have to like flip your mind every day on
it? No, I just went massively over budget. Because I was too excited. I just got way too excited. Because I went straight from Walking Dead to Brother Sun, where, you know, everyone's supposed to be like really wealthy, really glamorous. And I just went so excited. And my assistant designer, Allison, she basically was like, are you okay? Is this how you want to spend? I was like, yes, this is how I want to spend. So like, I went to all these bespoke tailors and leather shops, and then I like, didn't even ask about the price. I was just like, yeah, I want to custom make it. I want to make it beautiful, like gorgeous. And then they're like, here's the $50,000 bill for five. I was like, oh, well, too bad.
Not my show.
Power. Would you ever dream of that, like back in the day, 10, 15 years ago when you started your career, would you ever think you'd be at the point of like not even thinking about paying for a $50,000 costume?
No, because like, you know, back then doing indies and stuff, they would be like, I don't understand why you cannot make a movie with like $5,000. And then there used to be a habit where I'm sure you've all heard of it too. They expect us to return things that are worn and use and put the tags back on it and just pretend it was never done, like, you know, it never happened, which is extremely unethical, not to mention just disgusting. So I remember like back in the days when we still shop at Burlington Coat Factory, I remember on another job and I bought a pair of pants and I saw the handwriting on the tag and I was like, did I rebuy the same pair of pants on my last job? Because I think that's my own handwriting on it.
They do say at Burlington that they're more than great coats. They're also things that you've used before.
And things that I have used and probably smells like crotch.
Oh, it's just your closet. That Burlington was your full closet.
Yes.
Can you take us through the process of like how you design these costumes and everything from kind of receiving information to seeing it on screen?
Yeah, workflow.
I'll either use The Walking Dead or Brother Son. I'll use Brother Son because time-wise is more relevant.
Yeah.
I mean, we get the script first, and clearly, I mean, I'm so excited about this show. Please come out soon. You know, you read the script. Usually you don't know who the cast is at that point, and especially with Michelle Yeoh, they wouldn't tell me for the longest time that it was Michelle Yeoh. And then you read the script, you think about, I mean, first thing I was like, holy shit, there's a lot of stunts, so there's a lot of limits to what I can do, because then I need to be able to move in it. All these suits actually have, like, secret lycra panels, and they're all made of stretch, and we're treated with, like, fire safety stuff. Like, it's way more than just the suit because of the practicality of it. And then I think the first thing I do is usually start, my process is I start talking to other departments very quickly, because a lot of times the production designer gets started way before me. So I want to know his color palettes. I talk to locations. I want to see the sets. And then I make a mood board. We make a mood board, which I am really bad at doing because I don't understand why I need to be looking for references that already exist in the world from other people to tell people what I want to be doing. But that's mostly to communicate to studio execs what I'm thinking, but I can never find, well, then I'm not very creative if I can find the exact same thing on Pinterest now, can I? So I try to get close, and then I'll be like, I hope you like it. And I'm like I'm a really good used car salesman. So I just write some spiel with like some fake store, like fake, like insight behind it. And then as soon as they approve it, I just do whatever I want afterwards. It's like, trust what I have, I'm thinking about is better than what you can Pinterest. And yeah, and then we start, you figure out if it's better to shop it, buy it, make it, thrift it, depending on the scene. And yeah, you go from there. You have a fitting, you make a huge presentation. Again, you use car salesman spiel it. Sometimes we stretch photos, we do Photoshop it. Just to, you know, it is a very doctored document. And if they pass it, whether or not I listen is a different story, because by the time we shoot it that day, they usually don't remember what they approve. So I might add a little something in there that I want that they didn't like. And then they shot it. It's too late. You can't change it anymore.
Well, continuity-wise, it has to be the thing that we did. So sorry.
Mm-hmm. Whoopsies.
Whoops. I love that you like kind of fib on the pitch deck and just like make it what you want, because I think pitch decks are so dumb. Embellishing. That's a much better word.
Yeah. I'm not lying on it.
Yeah.
It's like, why am I limiting myself to something that is already out there? Like, don't you want me to create something you haven't seen before?
The art of creation in itself. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had to like kind of stand, you talk about being a salesman and everything. Have you ever kind of had to stand against the grain and be like, no, this lighting is literally bad for this costume. You need to change it or else I cannot.
Yes.
How does it feel when you kind of have to, you know?
I actually don't know. This is actually something I'm still trying to work on, striking a balance to go back to being on an AAPI podcast right now. If we are too combative, like WW white MD, what would a white man do? Like, if you say the exact same words with the exact same emphasis, they hate you because I've never heard this come out of our mouths before. And they're not going to understand why they don't like you. They just have like a visceral reaction to it. And so you kind of still have to deliver it in a way where they are not going to be stunned that it came out of an Asian person's mouth or a woman's mouth or a non-binary person's mouth. So I do think I have cross the line a little bit, because I sometimes just say, I mean, if he can say it, why can't I? And then it creates a very different reaction. The answer is I don't know. I am working on the right balance, because I hate that I'm the one that's working on that. Why are we working on this balance? Like, if you take my face away, if you switch it to like a man's voice or like an American accent, literally they'll be like, bro, that's crazy. You know, like,
why did you sound like me for a second? Oh, that's crazy. That brings up an interesting point. So I'm wondering, let's go back to like when you were just getting started and getting on productions. How is the respect different from now and them then? Like, how were you treated before, if that's how you're feeling in, like, in the position that you're in? Yeah.
It is so different. It is so different. I mean, this is also before Black Lives Matter, before Stop AAPI Hate, before hashtag Me Too, before Ivy Harvey Weinstein. So, I mean, we've seen it all. We've heard of all. I've been, like, tackled to a couch by a male producer, and then it was my fault, you know. And then, like, you know, I had an assistant that really wanted my job, and then this director actually pinned me to a couch, and she saw it happen, and then she's like, you bitch, like, hoeing yourself up to get the job, and I am doing it for with my own talent. Like, there's no allyship because we didn't know how to ally. It's not because she was a terrible person. Back then, we were not taught how to ally with each other, be it in our sexual orientation, race. Like, we just don't know. We just had to survive. So, or there is comments that's been made to me like, oh my God, look at how much you eat. I can't believe you're not obese. Like, we'll hear these things all the time because there is no recourse for any of it. There's no HR, and you just kind of suck it up. Like, Chinese jokes are everywhere. I had a producer once said to me, like, damn, I forgot. Like, there's like, damn, your ass is so flat. But I guess that makes sense. You're Asian. Like, all that shit is okay to say on set back then. And what do you say back to them? Like, this is also like 2007, 8, 9, 10, 2015 even. This is not even that long ago. And they can still say that. And I still had a producer say to me just 2 years ago, like, man, I know I love this girl. She loves her good whiskey. Like, I'm your department head. I'm not, what is this girl? Like, if I were a dude or like, you can't say that to me. It's like, I know I love her. She loves whiskey. Like, I was just like, what? So, but now I can be like, can you not say that? But back then I'll get fired if I say anything.
Follow-up question. How can we abuse the power that you have now? I'm just kidding.
Mira, can I just say,
I do.
You for being
all the time.
Good. You deserve it. Yes.
No regrets. Or they say no regrets.
No regrets.
No regrets ever. Not even one. Can I say thank you for being in the position that you're in? Because you are literally stopping all of that stuff that's happened to you from happening to other people. You are, like, saving up-and-coming everybody in the producing field, or anybody in, like, costume design, everybody who's on set. You're making the environment so much more safer just by being ahead on whatever project you're on. So thank you for doing what you do. My skin is crawling. I want to punch somebody.
I try. It doesn't always end well. Like I was saying, they are still a little bit taken aback with someone that looks like me. And I don't look 70, 50, like, I look young, I look Asian, I look female. Like, it's not easy. I can tell you on the recent job I will not name, or two recent jobs, I would go to HR and honestly, I am disappointed at the reaction. We're not there yet. We're way better than before, but we're definitely not there yet.
But I do have to say, it's these conversations, it's you even being open to talking about this stuff, like, on a platform where other people who want to be you and do what you do can listen in on these thoughts with you and just say, oh, okay, it's okay for me to say, please stop that, or don't talk to me that way. Mm-hmm. It's just that simple permission of, especially, like, these things that we get told as a woman or as a woman of color or whatever on set, just being allowed to say, no, you're not allowed to talk to me like that is such that's all you need. Just permission. And you're giving everybody permission,
absolutely,
which is so great.
Absolutely.
So in
there are repercussions, but do it anyways. We have to keep doing it. Like, we have to keep doing it. Yeah.
It's not worth it if you don't. But what would you say to anybody who's younger in the field, just getting started, whether it be in costume design or whatever the heck it may be, what would you say to people who are incoming to the field who perhaps want to do what you do?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I guess one of my biggest thing is don't gatekeep, because I keep saying in our generation, because I guess I'm 40. I just turned 40 a month ago, so I am
happy old. Birthday.
Thank you. I mean, it's been a month, but yeah. So my secret is, let me tell you, microneedling, and also be Asian. That's how you don't look 40.
Asian don't raise it, baby.
I don't know. Gatekeeping is such a big thing. I hate to like slam on our people, but I don't want to generalize. Clearly we don't all do that, but it is in our culture to gatekeep. I know I'm generalizing. I feel like the Black community is a little bit ahead of us, way ahead of us in that, is that we need to stop the whole, like, well, like, we have a lot of South Asians and Southeast Asians being very upset that East Asians are represented more. No, have that dialogue. Don't slam each other on Twitter saying, why don't people care about South Asians and Southeast Asians? If you don't have the talk with the people that already have the chance to be on camera, fine. I do agree. 90% of the Asian representation is Korean, Chinese, and Japanese. Then have that conversation. Like organizations like Gold House and all that are very inclusive to South and Southeast Asians and Pacific Islanders. You have to talk, because if you don't have, everyone needs to bring each other up. Like East Asians have the platform now. Then it is also East Asians' responsibility to remind people that Pacific Islanders and Southeast Asians and South Asians are there. So, but we are very quick to not tell each other or get angry at each other because our parents taught us to be that way, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. We cannot gatekeep. And there are so few Asian costume designers out there compared to other ethnicities that we have to be each other's friends, because they're going to try to lowball you and be like, oh, you don't want to take this job. Another Asian wants to take this job, because all we need to do is have some Asian crew this, and then we can, like, you know, hand in the homework. So we have to protect each other. Just don't gatekeep, because this is something we are, there is much room for improvement.
That's so applicable to everybody in this field.
I mean, the best person win. If you don't get it, then you don't get it. Then be better.
Have you seen kind of the diversifying in crewing and stuff as you continue to work? Like Brother Sun is probably a great example. What did that crew look like compared to The Walking Dead? Like, I imagine it was a little bit more. Oh, yeah.
Things I cannot say in the public forum. But no, Brother Sun is extremely inclusive. But I mean, honestly, if you Google me, you would have heard that I've said some things that I probably shouldn't have said on other public forums.
Right.
Is that like a lot of, and I don't care. a lot of previous AAPI shows are just AAPI by on the surface. Like, I don't mean the shows, but it's pretty obvious if you look into the crew list of some of the most famous AAPI groundbreaking, like breakthrough shows in the world. You look at the crew list, it's all Caucasian. And there's no attempt. Like, I don't care. You don't have to hire a Chinese person for a Chinese show. Just at least, I don't know, Black person, Indian person. I don't care. Try. Like, and then I would be told that it's because we don't have the resume. Why the hell would I have the resume if I can't even do my own
shit?
It's that
evil circle of you can't do it. Exactly. You don't have the resume. How am I going to get a job? Because you don't have a resume.
Exactly. So it's so different now. But that's even then, that's actually a very recent change, because we need people on camera to change first. So as we start seeing the representation with actors and directors, then it trickles down. It took a couple more years because the representation of having Asians behind the camera, like Helen Huang, who did Beef, like I did Brother's Son, or George Crittenden, who did, she did American Born Chinese. This is like the last 2 years only. I can tell you, this is the last 2 years only. All the shows before that was not that. So then this is where we have to be friends with each other, because they're going to start pitching us, and they already have started pitching us against each other to see who is like the cheaper one, because they don't really, studios don't really mean it. They're like, if we get one of them, we did it. Like, and then we'll see who takes it.
And yeah, that's where this like evil competition thrives from.
Because they want us. They want us to compete with each other.
Yeah.
We can't. Yeah.
In like ideal circumstances, right? If you were joining a show, what would you personally hope it looks like in terms of like your position there, what the crew looks like, or like a dream job, I guess. Like what is like the goal for you at this point in your career?
I guess, yeah, like I talk to my agent a lot, is that I don't want to over abuse this momentum that we have. And then we pigeonhole ourselves. This is something actors also have to go through, or directors. Like, then if they're like, Asians are so trendy right now, and then we only do AAPI jobs, then, and then when they, like, basically that means Hollywood never learns our lesson, that we can do anything just like other people. So I do hope, I don't want any of our AAPI, be it actors, designers, producers, directors, like, I don't want us to be pigeonholed. Like, I believe Destin Crittenden is doing something, you know, he's doing not just ABC, not just Shang-Chi. It is leading him to doing general Marvel work, you know, like I am doing The Walking Dead. Like, My dream is that it just is, you know, for the same thing to happen to us, like it's happening with actors, where Lucy Liu doesn't have to be Asian to be Charlie's Angel. Like, you know, like my friend Lily, like she doesn't have to be Asian to be in Sex Life. We just are, because we are here. I mean, I live in Queens, like literally is 80% Asian. It doesn't mean we have some sort of immigrant Jet Li origin story for every single one of us. We're just here.
What a beautiful world where people can just be people. Who would have thought?
That's crazy. Why are you really from? where are your parents from?
Yeah. Love that question, don't you?
So this is part of the podcast that I think is my favorite part of the podcast, where I know you've done interviews before and everything too, and you've talked about things and you've done like articles and everything. You're on this podcast right now. I mean, we'd love to give you a platform to kind of say whatever the hell you want to say, and whatever you need to say, whatever you think our audience of people who
listen to these things. There's some Jeremiah shit. I can see it. There's some Jeremiah shit. Okay.
Go off.
Oh my God. Anything?
Anything you want. Even just tell us what you got coming up. Like if you don't have like a message, literally fill this space with whatever. It's your soapbox. And we just happen to have you here.
Or we can sit here for 2 solid minutes of silence. I'm also open to that.
No, that is not an option. This is a podcast.
No, I will be honest. I do still struggle with, I just wanted to get better. I do want it to get better because I do think there is an invisible line that we cannot cross to this day. Like API designers, actors at this level we have, we are aware that there is a, like, you know, we say the bamboo ceiling, it still happens in our authority and HR. So the one thing I really do want to say is, like, I'm not going to lie, like on Brother Sun, on Walking Dead, I have stood up for a lot of things, abusive actor behavior or racism with crew that is not BIPOC, that there is just, I have to be honest, I'm still disappointed at the reaction. I am still disappointed that we're not being taken as seriously as some other disenfranchised groups, because they just somehow do not think I think we've all faced this, somehow we don't really count in the grand scheme of the system. I'm not going to, I'm going to be really honest. I don't care that people get upset at me for saying this. Like, I've had people that are people of color that I would not specify anymore that says, no, you can't fire me because you do not count, like to my face. I've had people say that to my face, and then HR will actually back them and not me, because they say I'm in a position of power. And I'm like, well, I'm the only BIPOC person in this position. Like, and I would be told to be the one to watch my words and not say like the white PA that yelled at me, because apparently Asians don't yell, Asians don't get angry, but somehow we don't count as a minority group. Like, I don't know why they don't understand that the wall and the filter is in their own heads, that they have never seen angry Asians. So it's just so shocking to them when it happens that we are still the one that are at fault, because I've had launched quite a few things. I've launched quite a few complaints in my last few jobs that I never had the balls to say in previous years. And I was very disappointed at the outcome.
Vera,
I don't want to sink people. I'm not trying to punish them, but the fact that they literally just don't, they dismiss us a lot.
Yeah.
You have given me so much permission during this podcast to, like, I'm reflecting on all the times that I've let people walk over me, or that I've let things slide on set, that I've let things like happen, or I've let people talk to me in a way that I shouldn't be talked to. So thank you for giving not only me, but everybody listening permission to truly stand up for yourself. That is so powerful. Oh, yay.
It has to come in numbers. It has to come in numbers. I think, like, some of us being the first 10, 20 to say it, we are, I'm not going to lie, we are bearing the consequences of it. To be reprimanded by HR, to be told that our demographic don't count. Like, I will suffer for it. Will my career face setbacks because of it? Yes, but the more the future generation does it, the more of us do that. Like, the first round always suffers. Then that's, it happens. But it can't possibly be in vain. Like, people cannot back down because they saw that I don't get hired for a season 2. Like, I can tell you, there are shows that didn't hire me back for season 2 because they think I start too much shit. But if I were a white man, they would just be like, bro, you crazy. And then they would just like, go get a beer with me. So I have suffered for it, but the more we do it, the more it becomes normalized. Not saying to start shit, but to just say what other demographics have said without being punished, because their vision of what we talk like, it doesn't jive with their fantasy in Asian porn or whatever.
It's so funny because it's like people are touted as like, you are pioneers for like being an advocate for this community. It's like getting past that stage of being pioneers where it is normalcy. That's what we need to actually be doing.
So yes.
If we could all take away even just like 5% of the energy that you gave us today, there's strength in numbers, and there's a hell of a lot of us.
Strength
out
in
there,
numbers.
Y'all. Yes. Oh yeah. Strength in numbers. I think that's one of my takeaways from this podcast is strength in numbers. And we'll talk about takeaways later, La. But
yes.
How are you doing on time? I want to be conscious of your time. I know we're gonna try to wrap up soon. I don't want to keep you here too long.
I'm okay. Like, I have a couple more minutes. I just heard my dad yawn, so I think he's up from his jet lag nap.
No worries.
Okay, we gotta get started.
It's all good. They just flew in like last night from Hong Kong, so there's like a 13-hour difference.
Mm. Oh wow!
So, like, what's happening? And I woke up like this morning. I heard the kitchen. I heard so much noise from the kitchen. I was like, it's fucking 6 a.m. What the hell?
No, it's not. Not for me.
I'm hungry. Yeah, my mom was like, I'm hungry. I want some breakfast, and I'm like,
go get a bagel. You're here.
I did make her a bagel, actually.
There you go. Oh my God. My streak on this podcast. I think I've talked about a bagel
Bagels.
Every single podcast episode.
Mm-hmm. Jesus. That's it? Mm-hmm. What's your favorite thing?
I'm a big, I don't know. I love an everything bagel with a good schmear on it. And I love mixing it up. I love some lox. I love some white fish.
I'm waiting for you to say that. The lox.
You know what I mean? Yes. Yeah. I'm crazy.
I put that on
bagels.
My dating profile.
There we go. Locks
like,
it down.
You don't like locks and wow.
You want to get with me, you better locks it down.
I don't know if I should laugh and be like, that's brilliant, or be like.
No, this is the energy we need. Support me. I'll support you. We just talked about this.
Numbers,
even my numbers, stupid jokes.
Yes, locks it down.
See, if we ever start a bagel shop, that's gonna be the name.
Locks.
And we specialize.
So if you have a seafood allergy, don't come in here.
Don't even try.
Thank you so much for being on this podcast. We're obsessed with you. We love talking to you.
Yeah, your energy is amazing. I was such a joy, and I hope you enjoyed your time.
I
hope
it
was
okay. Loved, you know, that's why I'm always like,
hell yeah!
What an episode.
What a cool ass lady. She was cool as hell.
That was so great. Viewers and listeners, we got to talk to Vera a little bit behind the scenes too after our podcast ended, and we got some tea, y'all. Like her interactions on set and everything and her journey and all of it. So inspiring, so empowering. This podcast, I just feel stoked. Like, I could run 6 miles right now.
Yeah, I mean, this is the benefit of getting to do this podcast is that we get like a 30 to 40 minute glimpse into these people's lives, right? But I hope it also inspires all of you to like go out and seek them out, because there is so much that we can learn from people like Vera about like how the industry works and like what it's actually like to be in the room and like what it means to respect someone or to build a team that actually matters on a set. Very, very, very interesting talk. I want to share my takeaway, which is take some of that energy, man. Like the strength in numbers energy that like this is wrong and like speaking up for yourself. I think I another moment of like, I think I needed to hear that today. You know what I mean? Like protect yourself, protect your people, protect your crew. What a cool, I don't know. The energy has shifted for sure in this space right now for me.
Oh, that makes me happy. That makes me so happy. Yeah, definitely the strength of numbers got me too. You know it though. Like, you inherently know these things, but just hearing someone talk about it and really relate how exactly important it is that you do this, not only know that it's true, but you put it into actual action. I think that was important for me to hear. Also, just finding your voice, a reoccurring trend for me, and really being able to speak out and stand up for yourself and the people around you and really fight and voice the injustices that you see against yourself and other people. Because what I've noticed as being with a woman of color on different sets or in just in walking life, dude, it's so easy to betray yourself. and to betray who you are, what you love about yourself, what you identify as, what you, your ethics and morals that are true to yourself. It's so easy to just say, that's not true for this one moment. And I'm going to let you kind of override how I feel about life and how I feel and what I think is true. Mm-hmm. But just to give yourself that permission to not let anybody do that to you, not to not let anybody betray yourself or whatever it may be. I think that was really great. Just strength in numbers and standing up for yourself in all ways possible.
And there was so much that that was said about cultural identity, but I think what was nice about Vera is that she kind of like expanded that to just like identity in general, right? Like yeah. If you know you're good at something, why would you let anyone else tell you that you're not? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like if you've done the work to be where you are, why shouldn't you be paid as much as the other person that's doing the gig? You know what I mean? So,
and if you don't get it, celebrate who does and do better. Yeah. Just do yes. like a, as good of a job as you can.
Yeah. I mean, in Filipino culture, we say isang bagsak all the time, right? Like one down, like, and then we all fall. If one falls, we all fall. And mm-hmm. I wish that was something that was true and consistent through all of this community, AAPI, just because it's not. Vera made a really great point about like there's so much gatekeeping and there is like a rift between not even just like the diaspora overseas versus what's here in America. It's like it is also within like the racial identities of like East versus South versus Southeast versus Pacifica. You know what I mean? Like, we have so much of this that we still need to link together in like a really healthy way. And it is about having the conversations, stuff like this podcast. Like, I know there's a bunch of people talking about why representation is important, but getting these details and like might like, you know, the real nitty gritty of like what it means to be in the room and be disrespected. You know, imagine like Vera shared some crazy anecdotes with us today. Imagine what she can't tell us. You know what I mean? Imagine how much worse it does get. And so we do have to just like continue that fight. And I'm really glad that, you know, our little platform allows for furthering that conversation. But at the end of the day, I'm leaving here as like a Vera fan. She was awesome as hell. That was super, super fun. Yeah.
Team Vera forever. Yeah. Team Vera forever.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Well,
bye.
Bye. No, that like, again, we are always so, so grateful for everyone who's listening to the podcast. And we're really proud of the fact that we've consistently been getting these guests and we're not stopping anytime soon. That's a part of the grind, mm-hmm. right? So thank you for joining us. And oh my God, I totally forgot, Ash. You're tremendous.
Oh, la. You're tremendous.
Oh, okay. Which means I think.
In case you forgot.
Yeah, I think that means if you and I are tremendous, that means you guys back home.
Oh, and them.
And us. Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone. Everyone is all, tremendous.
We're all tremendous. Amazing. All right, guys. We'll see you at the next episode. And thank you for joining us.
Bye.
The Tremendous Talk podcast is produced by Lauren Sharma, Ashley Rapuano Sanchez, Gabriela David, Joseph Peralde, and Jeremiah Abraham in collaboration with Tremendous. The Tremendous Talk podcast jingle is by Jared Sanchez and Ashley Rapuano Sanchez, produced at Hamsterdam Records.